Welcome to B2B, the Business Club Series 2. Our guest today, not club legend, Birmingham legend, Rude Jan.
Aston Villa fan.
Yeah.
Cheers, lads.
Yeah. Down Shash, yeah. This project burst as fine as you want.
Been stitched up here, good and proper today. I might have a Jeremy B. that's come out here soon.
It's not even a podcast, yeah. It's just a real, yeah, pumped.
Kind of under no duress.
We got ya. Yeah.
But yeah, so thanks for your time today. So the podcast, like we talked about before, it's about people of Birmingham, the things they've done in and around Birmingham, and kind of promoting the city and the people of the city.
I love what you do with the way I've been watching them, and it's great. I really do like it. You've had some great guests on as well. So thanks for having me.
No, I think
we think, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel, but we just think that a lot of people like yourself and a lot of guests you've had on here, Champion Birmingham, don't necessarily get the rewards or the hype that what they're doing, do you know what I mean?
I like these as well, because for me, it's kind of a therapy, because you just go through life and you know, your business, then family comes into the equation, football, and that's what my only kind of like get out, if you like, apart from music, which is also still work. So it's good sometimes to sort of step back and look back at where you're at, you know, and so I do like Saturdays on every year or so, so kind of, the journey continues, you know.
Talk about yourself I don't think you'd ever talk about yourself in detail about your internal thoughts, but getting it out and being like, oh.
Yeah. No, it's
I've
good.
Done that. It's class.
Definitely. Yeah. No, he does. Like I say, he's almost like therapy. It's great. I do enjoy it.
So you're obviously a DJ, promoter, producer, multiple business owner, Villa fan, obviously. Tell us a bit about growing up and your...
I come from very, very humble beginnings. My dad was a butcher, actually, and he had a couple of butcher shops, and it used to take me sort of to work and stuff. And I remember always thinking, I'd love to do that and be a butcher. Obviously, the last thing I'd ever want to be now. But it kind of gave me that insight into how, you know, running a business kind of is and going and opening and shut. And I kind of enjoyed that whole process. Mum and dad split when I was, I believe, 11 or something like that. Dad kind of just did one. Never saw him again. Well, we did. That's a kind of a lie. In our later life, he came back. But these things happen. And I think seeing my mum kind of like, not struggle, because she still worked and she did well and did her best for us, gave me that kind of motivation that if she can carry on and do that, like I don't want to put my family in that position when I'm old enough. Does that make sense? And it kind of gave me that little bit of a boost to wanting to make something of myself, I guess. So in a way, it kind of helped me, my dad, in a weird kind of way. It's a bit of a weird one, really, how I fell into work, because straight away, the day we left for, I think they call it study leave, I did no studying. I literally went that exact day that we finished, I think, at 1 o'clock. We took a, what was it called now? Never, ever got used.
No. Yeah.
And we took
not
that.
Folder, though.
Great folder, yeah. I might get that back out.
Big red leather.
PVC, but yeah.
Yeah, keep on.
But yeah, and then I went to an interview that day at a window manufacturer's, of all things, my mum's friend and neighbour two doors down when I lived Pipe Hayes way, said, look, would you want to do a bit of work? And I said, yeah. Went and had an interview, gave me the job. I was earning £280 at the age of 15. I was big time balling, you know. I was like, this is amazing. Absolutely zero studying got done. I was only supposed to be there for 2 weeks. They kept me on because I am a grafter. I was always a grafter even in that. Then I went on to like fitting windows and stuff like that. GCSEs, I probably passed one or two, just about. Because I didn't,
You're in what you can ask.
Pythagoras. Have you ever used Pythagoras in your life? No. So it means nothing. So yeah, I went into that. And I just kind of fell into window fit and manufacturing. It was a bit weird, really, when you think back. And I was doing that for 2 or 3 years. And when we were there, there was about 3 or 4 lads, remember right. We all kind of started a side business doing that as well, and I think that kind of gave me a bit of insight again into I want my own things. I don't want to be working for people. And then that all kind of fell through. I think the company went into liquidation. No fault.
Because you were doing all the work on the
side. No fault. We probably.
Was it a case of, at the time, you were dabbling with the DJ and then it kind of hazed it? Did you have a moment where you were like, okay,
let's... Yeah, no, what happened there was the DJing thing, as soon as I got to 18, I was still doing the Windows thing, I think just about. And then we all decided to start going clubbing. We all went to Exile, it was called at the time. Do you remember Exile?
Yeah.
Great club. And I remember going in and Pete Sheriff was the DJ. It's still DJs now, actually. And he was doing all this scratching and he was on the mic. And I always remember thinking, that's cool, man. I want to do that. And then we sort of, from that, then started going to things like God's Kitchen. It was actually the Dome on a Thursday night. Then we started going to God's Kitchen and places like that. And when I started going to God's Kitchen and seeing all these superstar DJs, I was like, wow, that's even better. I want to do that. And then myself, Hinsley, Colin H, and Paul Thomas, who's now God's Kitchen resident, we all used to just go to Hinsley and Colin H, the twins. We used to go to their house and they had like Belt Drive, Sound Lab, everything was vinyl then. And we just used to like play tracks for records. And, you know, we realised all four of us were actually all right at this. We were decent and kind of went from there. I started working in a sports shop in the middle of West Bromwich. And how did this come about? It's hard. I'm 47 now. Yeah. I was 18 at the time.
Yeah.
So we were. So we used to take our, like I said, so we all ended up getting decks ourselves because we all wanted to sort of do our own thing. And we'd all bring like cassettes into the sports shop and we'd play like, we'd be banging out trance on a Monday afternoon. They've been to West Brom. And this guy walks in one day and he's like, whose music's this, lads? No one's ever asked. It's us, it's me, this is mine. Oh, I want you to come and DJ. And over the road next to the old Woolworths, it was like a club called the Cork and Bottle. It was one of those, like, in between shops that you walk down into the basement. But spent a load of money on this place and it looked great. All new decks and great setup. And we were like, wow, we made it. We went down these steps on this night. We took about 40 people with us, which is why he booked us. Started playing, no money, lads, just drinks. Got hammered, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
This was a Friday night. Wakes up on a Saturday afternoon at 12 o'clock. We're supposed to be opening the shop at 9. Looks at our, you remember the old brick phones? We had one of them. I had one of them. I was always first to have anything like that. To be, I was a weirdo. I had this brick phone and it's ringing. It's about 50 missed calls. It's the boss is there. He's come down from Derby. He stood outside, like calling relentlessly. Where are you? We gets to the shop. We had to fess up, like, yeah, we're DJing over there. It was amazing. Yeah, I'm not interested. Do it again, you're sacked. And I said, look, we can't do this anymore. We're going to have to, you know, we're going to have to, like, just put, knock that on the head. Let's get back to what we're doing. We're managing this shop. We've got to take it a bit more seriously. Comes in the same day, the guy. Brilliant last night, lads. Right, we're doing it again next week.
Yeah,
straight away, not even more about it. We've got to do flyers, we've got to do this, that, and the other. And so, yeah, let's do it. And it all kind of like progressed from there, really. I then started doing pirate radio, which opened the door to a lot of things, literally DJing in a flat in the middle of the Lyndhurst.
Really?
Yeah, and I was
doing nothing to kind of start.
And then literally, I started getting people involved, like Daniel Sato, who's God's Kitchen resident, which again, I opened up more doors. And it kind of just progressed from there, really. And then my mum phoned me on my brick one day. And she said, there's an advert for a club in Birmingham called Club DNA. Bear in mind, I'm still in a sports shop at this point. And they're looking for promoters. I was like, right. So in my head, I'm thinking, that's a door in. I'm going to be a DJ there. So I was like, right, okay. Went and had a meet, interview with him.
And was that about 99 or something?
Yeah. 99. It probably was about 99, 99, I would have thought. Yeah, it would have been.
The year that I left school was 99, DNA. That's where everyone was going after. You're going DNA. Yeah. Oh, okay, now. And the girls were going DNA.
What a club, by the way. It had the sky bar above, do you remember the glass?
Yeah.
I mean, thinking back, it's a bit weird having a glass floor. Mm. Maybe just walk, Sherlock girls in shorts.
Yeah.
Weird. But anyway, so yeah, I started working there. And straight up on my interview, I'm like, I'm a DJ. I'm like, okay, no problem. So anyway, he's like, no, but I want to, can I play? But the guy, interestingly, who interviewed me was the guy, Pete Sherry from Exile, the first person I ever saw DJing. And he was like the DJ, music organizer, stroke, promoter, everything. I never forget, and they gave him like a Ford Puma that was sat outside. I remember looking, thinking, oh my God, look at that car. Wow. I want a bit of that.
The aspiration.
I want a bit of that. And and then I started working for them. They gave us these silver, terrible, thinking back, looked like E17. We used to have to go up to Broad Street, flyering, hand flyering people, you know, really earning our crust kind of thing. But I used to take my record box, obviously it was vinyl then, record box in heavy as anything, every single week, Friday, Saturday, put it in the office. Don't need me. Take it back out. A bit like a footballer, like taking his boots out. Do you need me now? Okay. Do you need me now? Same sort of thing. I'm thinking there's going to be a day and they're going to need me. And then I was on Broad Street one Saturday night. I get a phone call from Pete. Our ripping can't make it. And I'm like, I'll be there. Rushed back down, got my vinyl, went and played. And they left me on for the whole night. And that was it then, resident. And then that led to Steering Wheel, and then approached me to go and do some stuff for them there.
That's epic that you've done that, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
because some people just wouldn't.
You've got it.
Be like, no, and like, okay.
And this is what I tell people, you know, you get a lot of people say to me all the time, you know, what? How do I do it? What have you done? Like, what have you actually done to? Well, I've emailed a few people. I've sent. Well, that's not enough. Go to the event. Get in their face. Go and help them. Turn up, be a nose.
Be a runner.
Yeah.
Get a cake, coffee and whatever.
You've got to show commitment, and that's the only way you're ever going to get anywhere with it. And that then led to, like I say, Steering Wheel. I then took on the Saturday nights there when Slag left. And then the owner, Sydney, wanted to invest a load of money, which we then turned it into Hidden, Club Hidden.
Yeah.
And then that, they had Peruvia on a Saturday night. We had the Friday, they gave me the Friday night to keep me happy. But Peruvia did the Saturday with the big DJs. They said, right, you do a local thing. We did a thing called Clique, where the idea was everyone's part of the clique. We all meet up together, and we made the Friday night. It was huge. I mean, our competition was Fuel, which at the time I was resident, so it was a bit of a weird one. Like, I was at my own venue still, but we did this thing, but I was kind of, you know, that was my bread and butter. I had to do it. And we smashed it to the point that Peruvia was literally struggling. That left. We took on the Saturday. We had done an event called Promise, and then we started bringing in some of the biggest DJs. We had our Brandon Block, Alex P, Alistair White as our residents. Seamus Hadji, we had Junior Jackie Cream when they were just getting big for Defected.
Yeah.
I took the contract for Defected and Tool Room, both. So we really started to make Hidden a bit of a meetup place for the real music heads. And again, I mean, you think back to them days, and it's a shame really where Birmingham's at, because thinking now you had like Babushka, Miss Moneypenny's, there was Hidden.
Sudie Bakers.
Yeah, Sudie Bakers are still going. But I mean, we're talking about the times where you'd go out on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
And there'd be something on every night.
Yeah, and then you go to a student night Tuesday or Wednesday at Gatecrasher or whatever.
Mm.
So yeah, that's kind of like how I got to. But I would say the main thing was probably, I'd say that the turning point for me was Steering Wheel, I think, because then people started to take you seriously. It's like, why have they given this young kid a Saturday night? I was only 21, 22 maybe, and we did a night called Ultimate Freedom.
So how did that work with the snowball effect? So you're doing that. What's the time scale between each club before someone's coming knocking, going, seeing what you're doing here, will you come and do it here?
So the DNA thing was a couple of years. I think it lasted that long, did it, DNA? If I remember rightly.
Yeah, because there's a bottle of Carlsberg and a shot of Romanoff for £1.50, so
yeah.
It was never going to be sustainable.
It was crazy, innit? And it turned into Strip Club, didn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Which then the glass ceiling all of a sudden makes sense, doesn't it?
It does. What a club, though. I think back to that place and wow, what a place that was. They must have spent millions on that. Anyway, but yeah, so
that was like the time of Liberties and stuff as well, man.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
so you go there and end up in.
Well, I mean, everywhere was just packed. You know, you'd go into the Arcadium, it would just be like busting, but full of people. You go through there now on Friday or Saturday night.
Well, it's good. Like,
Tuesday night used to be?
Yeah, from the audience, not the audiences, but the kids now. Obviously, we was big on drinking and partying.
Yeah.
It seems to have shifted a bit now.
I think what I find now is...
Also, can I?
Yeah, no, it's true. Stan, you know, the cost of living, it's at an all-time high. And I'm seeing that with all the businesses. But with clubbing, you know, it's a commodity, and people used to go, right, I've got to go out. Now that I don't want to go out. So what I find now is, with the things that I do, like our house rave, you'll get everyone come out for that one or two events a year. I'll do a spin reunion of Christmas, and it gets them all out for that one event. But you think back to the days I'm talking about with Hidden and stuff, and I remember I was promoting to 35, 40-year-olds in Sobar. You don't get that now. You don't get that kind of... They'll go to, like, Fumo, and they'll have a few beers up there or whatever. They'll go to... There's a couple of places you know they'll be. But it's very young now.
You've got more Gold at Schloss, haven't you, now, where people seem to centralise a different
Schloss is another one, yeah. You get a lot of hen parties and stuff up there as well, don't you? And a lot of people do kind of go... A lot of people phone me and say, where can I go? And I'll say, there if you're older, or if you're younger, Hemman and Cooper, my mate, the Harrison runs that, you know... Other than that, unless there's events on, there's not really a lot. I'm sorry, going back to your question. So it depends. I would say I always stuck it out as best I could. Yeah. I was never one to just jump ship. I've always been very loyal when it comes to anything like that.
And I bet if they're seeing the crowds, your phone's ringing off the hook anyway, and people are contacting you, trying to bag it or a carrot.
Yeah, I found happened was everything has a shelf life, and as it was starting to drop off, I'd see it. And then I'd either start putting the feelers out, or I would get contacted. And I've had that a few times in my life. And I used to work with a guy called Eddie Bolton. He owned Ram Bamboo. I had a stint where I was promoting that. So all the footballers were coming down. It was all great club, all Moroccan kind of, like, think about that now, themed. We used to have, like, every footballer under the sun come down, spending fortunes just to get a table with one bottle of champagne. You look back and you're like, wow. And he always taught me loyalty is the main thing in this industry. And it's so true. He said, you show loyalty and you're going to go far. And I always did that. And I always took loyalty to him as well. We've done a lot of things together. We've done Bamboo. And we still do the odd spin thing together. He's not involved in the industry no more. So I just kind of take care of all that. But yeah, a couple of years, man. I was never anyone to, like, just jump ship willy-nilly. I've never been that guy.
Mm, you touched upon it then. Obviously, Blues and Villa were Premiership then as well. So it was absolutely behaving. And I spoke to Morrison, and Morrison used to be a lad, didn't he? Down there and stuff.
Always Zulus. Bamboo he was.
Is that, you touched upon it then. Did that work into your hands, and you were making it a little bit more exclusive, and maybe the tables were a little bit more expensive to try and get those clientele.
It was more about what you get with the footballers. Is I wouldn't actually book a table. They would just turn up at the door. I remember Ashley Young signed for Villa. Oh, and I was going out of my mind. He's just signed for Villa. I saw him walking up, and it was a marquee signing for Villa at the time. He's walking up, and I'm, oh my God. I used to get starstruck by the footballers. Oh my God, it's Ashley Young. Eddie Edding, not elbowing him. He's turning everyone around. What? Like, Ashley Young? He's like, okay, mate, time to get to the back of queue. I'm like, no. Let's get him to... No. We've got no tables left. Comes to the front and he's like, right, I'll put $5,000 down on the table. And Eddie's like, you're not coming in. Turned him away. I was like,
get lost.
What are you doing? What are you doing? But yeah, he did it a few times. And that's what I love about Eddie. He was always one. Doesn't matter who you are, what you're offering. If I've got customers, they come first. You want a table? There's my card. Book next week.
Wow.
But that's, so you got a lot of footballers.
For it then, though, actually, I got turned away from it. I was watching it on there.
Absolutely. Bear in mind, 100 people have just seen it. So it could have been a tactical thing from Eddie, who's very clever when it comes to stuff like that.
Between his legs back to Susie's.
Basically, yeah. But we used to get a lot of footballers turn up. And if there was a table, then he'd just be like, well, you can have it, but it's three bars of Cristal. It's a sales game, three bars of Cristal, and they'll take it, you know, it's business, but yeah, you'd get a lot of that. There wasn't very, even though they had liaison officers and stuff around them, they were never very organised.
Did the clubs work like that? As in, a bar share and a how did you negotiate it to a...
So I was just working for Bamboo at the time. So it was more of a, I was just on a wage. And if we did well, I'd get, you know, something else. When I'm doing my events like Art House Rave and stuff like that, different venues have different ways of working. With the majority of them, you're going to kick back on the bar. So you'll get a cost of the venue, cost for security, all included. And then if you do a certain amount, you get a certain amount. It's like a sliding
scale. Everyone wins.
So it pretty much usually evens out. You've got no cost, but you've got to get the numbers, do the numbers for that. And that's the risky thing these days, because it is so hit and miss to what it used to be. You used to put a flyer out, put a big DJ on it, do a bit of promo. We used to board all of the... Do you remember that time when all the promoters were boarding? And that's the thing. It's so different now to what it was then. And I just feel, it's very risky now for promoters and for DJs. And I always used to say, go and run your own events. I don't think it's about that now. I think it is about, like I say, being in people's faces, being a bit of a nose on this on the scene. And
socials
and producing music these days, because it's so easy to get your music out there now.
Yeah,
it's a lot different. Like I said, back in the day, our way was filling events, filling nightclubs, postering in the with the rain, the snow, whatever, you know. And it turned into a war. I remember at one point you used to drive down the Haggie Road, and all of the I actually moved to Haggie Road because I wanted to be the first out every day, literally. And you'd have like 10 posters up every lamppost, every traffic light. And they got to a point where they really clamped down, and we got a £2,000 fine, I think, at one point. It's like £10 for each poster. We're going through the post. Like, right, what do we do now? So they quickly put a stop on that, yeah. Now you just put a post out and you've just reached 5,000 people. It's great.
Yeah. Have you been interested in these dialogues for Soul Gets? These are popped up now.
Yeah, so our house rave is usually a day rave. We usually do 12 till 12. So, and I like it. But what you find is, because you've got like, it's a real mix. You've got some who are still single. You've got some of the kids are just growing up. You've got kids, some have just had a child. So you found it didn't really fill up till 4 or 5. So the first half of the day was a bit naff. So all right, let's not do that. And so with this, our house rave this Sunday, it's from 6 till 2, but then we're doing an after party at Air. So we're doing the O2 Institute, which is going to be amazing. What a venue. And then back to Air. So we're doing two iconic God's Kitchen venues in one night.
I said, I seen you live the other day, and I was like, even just seeing it, and
you
just thought, no way.
You're just mad. You go in there and you just still get them chills. It reminds me of, you know, you used to go in, you do that walk, you got the chandeliers, you've been the long corridor. And it's just the same, but clean. You're not sticking to the floor anymore, yeah?
Yeah.
But you walk into the area, into the balcony above, which looks down onto the main arena. Unbelievable. What a venue. So, yeah, that's what...
That was about the same time, wasn't it, when Air opened? And it was, again, Birmingham was the place where these clubs were opening, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was. Walking, just the wow factor.
For me, those two venues were always the best in Birmingham. And I think they probably still are, to be honest. Obviously, it's turned to Zoom off now, hasn't it? So it's a bit different. Have you been in there recently? So it's they've kind of closed the main room. You used to go in there, the balcony around the top, didn't you, Air?
Yeah.
And you could look straight down. It's almost like a second room above now. So it's kind of like a lower ceiling.
Right.
Doesn't quite have the same effect, but for an after party, it'd be amazing. Look forward to it.
Because at what point did you start amalgamating tattooing and Vivid Ink? And where did that come from in and around what you were doing with the music?
So I've always been heavily tattooed, and I was getting tattooed by a very well-known artist in Erlington called Dado. Dado was actually one of his artists called Paul who used to tattoo me. And I just fancied a switch of artists one day, and Andy, my business partner Vivid Ink, had already opened the Birmingham Vivid Ink. I know his wife very well, Kelly. She said, right, go see my fella. Has got a really good artist there, his name's Russell. And when you think back to what I was used to and what the new breed, as I call them, of artists were coming through, he was fun. He was just amazing. And started getting tattooed by him and just kind of helped him sort of build the client base and stuff like that. And then I was actually in Ibiza working a season over there. We were doing Rock and Roller at Eden. It phones me up. Yeah, brilliant. We had a great summer out there. And he just rang me up one day and said, do you fancy coming back, having a chat? I've got a proposal, sat down. You know, I think you can bring some value. And it kind of went from there. So I think the music kind of thing helped in a big way because everyone knew about my tattoo, to the point that Eddie actually turned me away from Bamboo when I wasn't working for him there. He actually turned me away because I remember walking up, I had a white, really smart shirt on, and I rolled the sleeves up, and he's like, you can't come in, mate, you're covered. And all that was two sleeves. And back then, that was covered.
Yeah.
So it kind of like, I was like the tattoo guy. So everyone kind of like, and then when you open a studio, it was a bit of a weird one actually, because everyone got the wrong end of the stick. They all thought I'd turn into a tattoo artist. And everyone was messaging me, could you do this for me? And everyone thought that I was an artist. So when I'm posting work of the guys, they're all like, that's amazing. Can you? And I'm like, he literally says by artist Mario or artist by. And I still get it now. One of the girls messaged me from one of the studios the other day, Sutton, and said, do you fancy doing this room? And someone had put, no, I want room. I'm having no one other than room. You do not.
You always say that.
I've tattooed some of the artists, to be fair, because when they like hit a milestone, like 5 years with the video, 10 years with the video, they're like, oh, will you put like a number 10 on me or a number? And I'm terrible, man. It's so hard. It's so hard. Oh, yeah. It looks really easy, you know, but it's like you're used to, you live your whole life like using a pencil. But we're talking about, like, they're massive machines, and it's just, I don't know how they do what they do. And the thing is, you know, the artists these days, what they can put into the skin through ink is just incredible, you know, compared to days gone by. You can literally put a photograph in your skin and you get longevity out of it as well. It's not dropping out, it's staying for forever. Some of the guys we've got are unbelievable.
Yeah, so you had Birmingham Sutton, because you have expanded now, haven't you?
Is it Birmingham Sutton and Stafford? I've got three of them. I have Birmingham Sutton and Derby. We've got, what I like to do is get a big location, fill it with artists, really diverse. And so someone comes in, we've got enough artists that you're not waiting for 6 months. And we cover every single part of the spectrum, of tattooing. And we have got a lot of artists in all the studios now, and they're extremely good at what they do. We've got an amazing team, to be fair. We're very blessed with who we've got there. And I think they like the whole Vivid Ink. The way that we work is we take the admin away for the artists. So they're coming in, they want to concentrate solely on tattoos and that client for the day. I think a lot of studios or people who kind of go on to do their own thing, they've very quickly realised you've got to fill your own diary, you've got to have all that contact backwards and forwards. It's a full-time thing, you know. We've got three members of staff in each studio who take care of all of that. So we offer full diary, and we offer full help. We do all the marketing, and we make sure our guys are busy. So, yeah, it was
me. For the creatives are creative, aren't they?
Yeah,
100%. And you want them to be honing in on that creativity. And I'm the same, and this is what I do. But the admin sometimes.
We have a lot of eyes come and say, like, you know, they're answering phones, they're taking payments, that, you know, and every time they stop, you know, they're losing the focus on that. So if you're shading something, you go back to it, you know, you're perhaps not getting the best out of that particular artist at that particular time. So yeah, it's important that that's taken away from them a little bit. So that's why it really does work with the way we work.
Yeah.
So just before we touch on the other businesses, just to go back to the music for a moment, because it's quite a big thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've worked all over the world. Is there a standout moment for you where you've gone? Because you say at the start, you're saying it's therapeutic, you don't really ever look back, you just carry on.
I've got my Ford Puma.
Yes, you're at St Andrews now, you're at Flag
Puma. I was going to say, the pinnacle is here right now, lads, you know. We're not here beating you 5-1 this time, though.
Cut the camera. you've been all over the world, haven't you?
Yeah.
You took your club notes all over the world. Was there a moment where you've just gone, this is it, I've made it, this is amazing?
I'll be honest, like, I do look back at some of my past experiences, and I do think, wow, you know, if this all ended today, I've had some amazing times. I would say there's a couple really standout moments. I think one of them, we went and done the South Korea in Seoul. We did the World DJ Festival, which was unbelievable. It was absolutely amazing. It's actually a really funny story about that. So we all got there. It was me, Mickey Slim, Alex Schmitz. We took Rock and Roller there. And you ever heard of the DJ Peggy Goo? She's massive now, huge. She's got like 3 million followers. She's if I played the track, nah, you'd know it. No. It's hers.
Yeah.
Anyway, she is our au pair for the weekend. She just turns up. At this point, she's just a person who was going to university in London. And we get off the plane. She's there holding Rock and Roller. We go over to her. She speaks great English, telling us about what she's doing, fashion and stuff like that. And we have this great weekend over there. Comes to the day of the show. We all get in our transport. I think it was a V-Class or whatever. We were on our way there. We meet Peggy at the time she was called Peggy Sue, not Peggy Good. Anyway, we meet her at the festival site. I get out. She takes a look at me and she's like, what are you wearing? And I'm like, I'm going to look great. Some of that. She went, you cannot wear that outfit here. So I didn't realise, because of the North Korea, South Korea, big war that was going on at the time, and apparently they were threatening to nuke the South Korea, North Korea were going to nuke South Korea, which is exactly where we were on that weekend, that you can't wear like camo or anything like that. And I didn't know this. So I'm wearing a pair of big baggy like camo trousers. They were so cool as well. I'm like, well, what am I going to do? Wear my boxer shorts, you know? She's like, well, you're behind a DJ booth. You just can't go into the crowd. Be really careful. So I'm thinking, my T-shirt literally says, start wars. So do you remember Guilty Royalty, Jay, rest in peace? Yeah. That was his brand. And he had, and it's like Darth Vader's face and obviously Star Wars, but it's start wars. And she looked, and obviously she's looked at that, and she went, you need to turn that round as well. So there's a video of
then you're bronc chuck in the middle of a conflict on the border of North and South Korea in a pair of camo trousers, yeah. Start war t-shirt.
Literally couldn't have worn anything worse, and I'm thinking, what's wrong with my life? I look great. So anyway, so I've had to turn the T-shirt round. So on YouTube, there's a video of me DJing with my T-shirt backwards. Honestly, mate, you can't even write it. So that was one of the times. I remember looking down and thinking, wow, we're DJing in front of, like, you know, 5,000... probably more than that people. And it just kind of happened. We like I say, it's, you get lost a little bit. You find yourself in these places, and then you have to like take a bit of a breather and go, wow, look where we are. Like, this is amazing. And so that was one of them. And I think when we got the residency at Club Eden in Ibiza, and we took Rock and Roll right there, we're getting noticed now for what we're doing. And we've done the whole season now. We're actually staying in Judge Jules Villa in Jesus. And we're like, wow, we live in the dream here. Do you know what I mean? That was probably one of the other ones, the other time. So, yeah, I'd say they'd be the two main.
Like you say, I suppose if you're traveling a lot and then you work and you're thinking about it, well, I'm going, everything's going through your head. Sometimes it's hard to take a step back to be like.
Oh, it was relentless at the time because, like I say, we'd be, you know, we were doing Spin on a Thursday night, Studio Bakers. Then Friday we'd have Clique. Saturday we'd have Promise. Sunday we'd be somewhere out, you know. It was just constant, and then back onto the promoting. And then Tuesday, Wednesday would be at student events, and then you're at the weekend again. So it's just constant.
Yeah.
But yeah, you go to them places, and you just be, you know, you're with all your lads. You're all on the same journey, and it was just amazing. But yeah, so then back to the Peggy thing. So I get this this video comes up for 909, and I'm like, Peggy Goo. That sounds like that girl who took us to around South Korea. I click on her and I'm like, oh my God, it is. I found Alex Schmitz, who was one of the rock and roll lads. I went, mate, Peggy Goo. And he went, yeah, it's Peggy Sue. I went, no way. She's huge. She's like one of the biggest artists in dance music. I can't even get a response out of her now.
Really?
Yeah, so I'm going to tag you in this, by the way. Yeah, I'm talking about you in a podcast.
Send you a set of camos.
That's not a bass. Do you think... Do you take inspiration that she saw you and she thought, actually, you know what?
She's not DJing with a top back, is it?
No, she's not. She is, no. it was evident at the time that she loved being around the industry and music and the you know, that whole thing. You could see that. And
going back to how you start, she's doing the running and the au pairing around it to get in.
Obviously, picking her up soon. Do you know what I mean?
Carrying records.
We have a book her out.
Show us St. Andrews. Can be up. Yeah.
It's not big enough here, lads.
No, so essentially, so you've lived a a lot of time, a few times, haven't you? So around, that's a whole journey in itself that carries on. But then around that, then obviously you're an entrepreneur, you've got various businesses away from music. How did you kind of expand into the other things that you're involved in?
So there's a few things. I mean, I get quite a few opportunities come my way. You can get really carried away with stuff, but the way I see it now is, because I've got family, you've got to, I want my home life as well. So if anything, I've kind of like stepped back a little bit rather than constantly going forward and consolidating the business I've got to be able to spend the time with the family. Something came up with Roller Jam, an opportunity came up with that. And I thought, why is there no roller skating rink in this city, you know? Because I know it is a big thing, and I'm thinking, okay, so I can help the music side of things and things like that. We got a couple of people around the table and we went for it. And it did really well for about a year, I would say, year and a half. And then very quickly became apparent why there are no skating arenas in around the Midlands. I feel it's a very niche thing. You get a lot of families who come, but then the kid will fall over, cry, and they'll leave. Or you'll get people on the first date, and then they don't actually want to skate. But then you'll get the guys come, and we start to turn into a bit of a skating community. They all start to come, and they start doing speed skating, and people don't want to be on the rink. It's difficult, I think, to do something like that. I think you almost need two rinks, you know, one for them and one for them.
Mm.
And so we started putting on events there and stuff like that, and started to become something I've always said I didn't want, and that was to own a nightclub. I'm not interested. Like, with what goes with it, the politics, the headache, the risk. I was just like, I don't want this. So we've kind of pulled away from that. And I'm at that point in my life now where if something's not working, or if something is taking too much of my time or too much stress is involved, go. It's not worth my energy, you know? And that's kind of where I'm at. So then, other than that, I've got I've always loved holidaying, going away and stuff like that. I started investing in Spain a long time ago. I bought my first property out there, very cheap. Spain was on its knees. They threw the villa at me, literally. There's pretty much zero interest on the mortgage payments. What could go wrong? So got that. I ended up selling that about 2-3 years later. Made a huge amount of money on that when I bought another one. And then from that, I've just kind of expanded. I've got three out there now, and I rent two of them out. And that, I enjoy that because you've got like families going out there that I can recommend where they go. And people say to me all the time, are you not like, is that not annoying that you're constantly having to like get back to people? No, I really actually enjoy that. I people sending pictures of their families and stuff. So yeah, Rue de la Castro it's called, for anyone wanting to know what that is.
We'll put the link.
Yeah, we'll put the link.
Where do I see? It's just come back to me now. Where do I see you've got like a big villa badge in your pool somewhere?
That's at home.
I'm seeing that live. You put some on last year or something. And
it was recent. It's quite recent. It's quite recent.
It's just come to me now.
So basically, I also collect. I'm a bit of a weirdo, to be honest, but this is my geeky side. I collect and I fall into it. Again, in a bit of a weird kind of way, match-worn villa shirts. So I would say I'm probably self-proclaimed one of the top three collectors in the country with the shirts I've got, like Gary Shaw's 1982 European Cup final shirt.
Aye.
And then I've got like Dalian Atkinson when he scored the worldie at Wimbledon when he dazzled a load of players, the umbrella, I've got that shirt.
Mm.
So shirts from like really iconic moments are now in my possession, just in my wardrobe, weirdly. And I've got the Aston Villa match shirts is my handle, and you can see them on there. And it's become a bit of a, people ask me questions about them all the time, you know, like, what's that? How did you come about? Have you got Gary Shaw's shirt? Rest in peace. Obviously, he died 2 weeks after I got that shirt, actually. And the badge, so it's a really weird one. So I just gets this message saying, Rue, do you want the badge off the stadium? Because obviously, we had a change of crest. They're putting the new one on. I've got this one coming down. The guys who are commissioned, they want, I think they wanted $5,000 for it. And I was like, we're doing the badge for $5,000, even though it'd be an amazing thing to have. Nah, I've got nowhere for it. about a month later, I get another message. Do you want this villa crest? I said, I've said, I've got nowhere for it. I said, okay, well, they're offering. If you cover the cost of the takedown and delivery, you can have it. I was like, okay, I'll stick it in the shed for a rainy day. No problem. So it comes in like, I mean, it's massive. It's like, I think it's about 4 meters long. No, it's bigger than that. It's probably 5 meters long by 3 meters. It's huge. And I'm like, it comes in different like sections, all the LEDs, it all clicks together, all gets like, all the wires get put together and it goes up. I thought, you know, I've got all these shirts, who knows one day, I could end up doing something with the shirts and with that, always thinking ahead. And they delivered it to site. I phoned the missus and listen, I've just bought this crest. And she went, yeah, knowing you, you have you, and I'm not gonna say what you call me. I've told you, I've just told you, I bought it anyway. So the following Tuesday, it turns up, I get this phone call, what's this on the lawn? I said, well, I told you I bought the villa crest, like off the stadium. She's like, what are you planning to do with this? I said, don't worry, it's going in the shed. Cool, okay, cool, get time. And it's literally taking up a lot of the lawn. Got home and I'm like, right, okay. Phone the guy up. I said, right, how's best to store this? He went, oh no, you can't fold it or roll it up because it's a canvas. You know, the actual, it's like a big aluminium tray and it's a canvas that stretches over it. He went, you can't fold it up, mate. What are we doing with this now? I'm like, right. He went, this is why he wanted it out of his garden. He's got nowhere for it. So I've literally looked everywhere around here. What can I do with this? And quite appalled and I've put it above that. And it didn't tell the miss about that either. And then we had a birthday party for the little ones. Birthday this week and she had like a mermaid come round with a silicon tower, looks so magical, and then you got this big whopping villa badge at the front. And she phones me up, how are we gonna get this flag down? I went, okay, so it's not a flag, it's a crest. Yeah. It took them a day to install, so obviously it ain't coming down. How are we gonna cover it up? She's nuts. So yeah, we've got these pictures of Ariel swimming around the pool and a villa badge above it, right?
How did you start your villa journey? Past that?
No. We were tattooing a lot of the lads at Vividing St Caulfield. Fabian Delph became a friend of mine when he was captain of the club. And he gave me a few shirts. He gave me a semi-final shirt before we went to we got beat at Man City at Wembley 3-0. So he gave me a few shirts, some boots and stuff. Then we started tattooing John Stones when he went to Man City. Passed them down to me. I did some work with Jack Grealish. He gave me a shirt the day my little girl was born, actually. We played Leeds away. Do you remember the goal? And the manager made Leeds score because there was that whole controversial we stopped play. Do you remember that? Yeah. And it all went fisticuffs on the pitch. That
he tried to smash it, then he had a hundred Blair or someone.
Yeah, I think it was, wasn't it? Yeah. And who scored the goal? Yeah, Adoma, Albert Adoma. Yeah, he tried to and then. So that game, I knew that our little girl was coming via, how bad is that? What's it called?
Cesarean.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not free.
I'm blank. Yeah, you're a pro.
I'm a line of each.
Yeah. And so knowing that, I said to Jack, this is before I started doing some work. I knew him anyway. He used to come to Bamboo and stuff. And I said, like, listen, man, I don't mean to be that guy, but I'll donate whatever to charity. Can I get your shirt from that game? Because I want something to show my little girl that this kind of day, we played the day she came. And he said, course, no problem. Forgot about it. And about a month later, when I've got this shirt here, mate, you want to come and get it? I was like, no way, you got it. And it's in a frame in one of our rooms now. And little girl goes up to it all the time. And she's like, oh, is Jack playing this week? And I'm like, yeah, don't play Phil no more.
Oh. But you know what? Away from the, all the obviously, like the normal media and that, everyone that knows him, says what a lovely bloke he is, don't they?
He's a lovely guy. It's Jack's really misunderstood. And I think he's a good looking lad. He's one of the lads, isn't he? Do you know what I mean?
He's a lad.
He's a solid lad through and through. He'll sit down at a table and you would not think he's got the millions and millions he's got. You'd think he's one of us. And there's a lot of stuff that he does that goes under the radar. You know, when there's you remember the guy that hit him there and stuff like that? He contributed heavily to his funeral, stuff like that. There's a lot that people don't know about Jack.
Yeah.
And he doesn't
boast about it. Community and stuff as well.
Because obviously he's got his sister and he's a real, real caring kid. He really is. He actually fell out with me, you know, because I think he fell out of him anyway. Do you remember when we beat Man City at Villa Park 1-0? I was actually at Lapland at the time, so I weren't at the game, and I put something up about it's not very often that Villa make Man City look mediocre, and he sent me a laughing face. Like, are you laughing at? Come on, Matt, as a Villa fan, you haven't responded since that.
So this is your Holly French now.
I know, yeah.
Just reach out this good Jack on your eyes and say, yeah, it's fine.
But it's not to be needly. They'll talk like Fabian Delph being a friend and that. How much did that hurt as a Villa fan? Or was it because you knew him, did you know it was kind of something that was going? Because in and around the Villa community of our friend, that was quite a... Because he was under the shirt pictures for the new season.
Yeah.
The next thing he's gone. Man City, ironically.
Well, he actually owes me 50 quid. If you're watching this, Fabian, I won't be sharing it. So, yeah, basically, he says to me at the time, because it was all over Sky that it was going to go, wasn't it? And I messaged him saying, do you want a bit of insight? I was like, good luck from the lad, the guys at Vivid Inc. You know, we thank you for your custom. We hope we see you soon. He's like, cheers, mate. I do appreciate it. And then I think we play Blackpool in the FA Cup the following Saturday. It's about 3 days later. And he messaged me saying, put some money on me staying.
Like, yeah.
What do you mean? And he went like, I can't say too much. But yeah. He's like, okay, cool. And then half time, they announced it all. I'm this club's captain. I'm going nowhere. And I'm like, no way. 3 days later, he went. That's like,
yeah.
And it was a bit of a...
It's a weird one, isn't
it? Yeah, what happened was he was told that certain players were going to stay. There was an A and a B that was going to happen, and it was always going to be A. He was staying. His manager said stay. You know, sorry, his agent. And then he phoned one day and said no. They're going with B, a load of French players. And I'll never forget, Fabian says to me, Villa are going down. And I was like, no, mate, we're Aston Villa, we're not going down. Oh my God, it was one of the most torrid seasons I've ever...
Who was that in charge?
Remy
Gard.
Remy Gard, weren't it?
Remy Gard.
Remy Gard, yeah.
Because I've got a story about that as well, that Ben Pesce, who is now our assistant manager
at
Blues, he, Remy Gard promoted him to become part of his staff.
Okay.
Because he was under 21, I think, at Villa. And the story goes that when Remy Gard was just fucking got crap.
Yeah.
That he's gone, it's all his backroom staff. Come on, we're going. And I don't know where he is now. Probably Arsenal in France somewhere.
Well, yeah.
And Ben said, I'll go back to the under 21s.
Really?
And then obviously then it transpires that he's got there with a job there. But that... Yeah, I remember that just being a terrible, terrible year, wasn't it?
It was honestly, we were shocking. We were shocking. One of the worst times being a Villa fan, that was, by far. But we kept our season tickets. I remember saying to the lads, like, look, you know, we've got an amazing we're on the halfway line, about 20 rows back. Perfect view. As all right, we've got to keep our seats. So no matter what, lads, we're going down. We're going to the games. And that was a terrible. Do you know, I love the Championship, you know. I loved it. Because we were banging goals in for fun. It was great.
This is what my friend was saying.
Yeah.
This is what we always say about being in the Premiership. I know it's been a while. But in the Championship, you could draw 0-0 one week, win 5-4 the next week, lose 3-0 the next week, and at least you're seeing a bit of action. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, interim action. Yeah, I do. Blasted everybody. Miss that a little bit.
don't miss it too much, because we'll be in the same boat next week.
You'll set you back now, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Look, where Villa were, obviously where you are now is, you know, Champions League.
Yeah.
Top 10 teams in the world or something, wasn't it? Statistically, or something the other week. But that said, it was the season when you went down and Tottenham made the offer for Grealish.
Yeah.
There was like 500,000 under or over the asking price. Something, I think 15 and they offered 14, something like that,
wasn't it?
And you were going to sell your car park and it was literally that close. And then
We nearly went, yeah. Villa nearly went. And you look at the club now, I mean, it's amazing where Villa have got to now. I've been to, I'd say 80% of the away games in Europe, and just to see your club at Paris, PSG, and I went to Dortmund, and it was only a friendly pre-season, but yeah, just following the club around now and seeing, you know, where we're at. I mean, we've bottled the season now. Do you know what I mean? We've bottled it with the final Saturday. You know, we put up a very good fight against PSG. I was watching them yesterday, and you know, they didn't even get a second gear with Arsenal. But Villa, we had them against the right. I actually missed that game. So I was in Dubai. I was fuming. One of the best games at Villa Park for probably 20 years. I knew it was going to... I was saying all over my statuses, this is going to be a night of magic at Villa Park. I just knew it was. But I've committed to the holiday with the family. I was actually DJing out there, actually, in Abu Dhabi, yeah. But so we made a bit of a holiday out of it as well. And I knew it was going to be one of them games. And to beat them at home, you know...
That's what was frightening as well.
Yeah.
It was one of those situations then, right? When you go into, when you've got a lead.
Yeah.
It's all they always say, isn't it? The old saying, 2-0 is the most dangerous score.
Yeah, it is.
Because of what you do.
Yeah.
And then Villa have got to come forward. That will then came
to that. Yeah, yeah.
It was. It was a brilliant game. You've come out with a huge credit. I mean,
English should have won.
Yeah, well, no, we should have. We should at least have took them into extra time. But I felt like when he took Rashford off, I think we lost the momentum a little bit there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, a week or two. It's a long time in football, isn't it? Because you go from FA Cup, Champions League, opportunities are endless. I think you've with Man City winning and the likelihood that they probably will beat Palace. Yeah. That's kind of your...
That Man City game, bad. I was there. I was in Manchester for that as well, and that hurt. That last minute, literally 94 minutes, I think it was.
Yeah.
That's Villa. That's Villa season. Like, I think we've had 23 games this season where they've scored on the first attack. The opposing team has scored on the first attack. And you got to look at that and go, hang on a minute. We've got supposedly the world's number one in it. Don't be wrong, him is a great keeper. But I think the World Cup and everything's got to his head a little bit. And like some of the mistakes at the back, I think it's just a leaky defence. If we hadn't had that, we'd be up there now. We really would.
In the 94th minute as well, I know it was probably some cynics would say it's poor marking, but you don't expect someone at the back post to be running.
Absolutely
95% of the time, no one's running in the back post.
It's quite got done there. Annoyingly though, with the same happened at PSG away, same player, same thing, bought a right. He's not a right back.
Yeah.
And it's just, Emery, if you're watching this, I've got a bit of spare time there. Come and be your advisor. Put him at right back.
Okay, so
that's who one of your oars actually, Jason Stansfield.
Oh, Jason
Stansfield.
Stansfield, yeah.
Yeah.
With tattoo.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I was gonna say that. Have you ever turned away any blues players?
No.
Or give him a little sneaky show.
Put a little line in there. No, we're super professional at moving in, so everybody's welcome.
That's business is business.
I just mind my shake your hand. Joke.
Yeah, Stansfield, yeah, unbelievable.
He's a great player, isn't
he? Unbelievable.
So before we kind of finish off, just talk to us about the Our House stuff that you've got. I see your friend George, is it?
Yeah, George, my business partner, who's been involved in a lot of stuff. We used to have the Funky Bear, the restaurants. That was always a dream of mine as well, and restaurants as well, and we had them for 5 years. Great when you first launch them. When the hype dies down after a year or two, it starts to get very hard. And I'll be honest with you, I think owning a restaurant post-COVID is difficult. It's difficult. People just don't go out Monday to Thursday, Monday to Friday sometimes anymore. And you're kind of like hoping on a Saturday and Sunday only to make your money. So yeah, again, as I said, if it's affecting my energy, it's affecting my stress, levels, it goes. And before we start to lose money, I said, right, they've got to go. And then... that's where we're at, and that they went. But we've continued to do stuff together. Our house rave, this is our last event now.
You retired a couple of times.
I've definitely retired once. I think it might have been a couple of times.
That's Tyson awesome, Dura.
It's hard, you know. It's hard. If you've got love and a passion for something, it's very difficult. So with the Our House Rave thing, that was me coming out of retirement to do one last party. It was so good. We did it at the Q Club. We have Robin S. Perform live. And what I did, I wanted to put like all of my events, all of my past promotions like Steering Wheel, Bakers, Mud Club, Spin, all under one roof. And that's where Our House Rave was kind of born. And people just something clicked in it. And, playing the classics, because at that point there was no one doing that, and we kind of brought all of the old DJs and artists out of retirement. Now, I'm not saying we are the people that sort of started that whole thing, but I think in Birmingham we definitely are, because it wasn't happening, and we started doing like live streams, and it was just, how can I put it? It was the fastest growing thing, a business I've been involved in. Like, we sold 3,500 tickets in like 3 months, to the point it was sell out. And then, like I say, now all those DJs that were not doing anything, we were getting like 300 quid, 400 quid. Now we're asking them, it's like, yeah, 2.5 grand, 3,000. It's like, gee, you can't make money out of this. So yeah, this is the last one purely because I'm concentrating more on music now, music production. And our house rave, as much as I love it, as much as it's always a great night when you get to the night, the event itself, it's stressful because people buy, yeah, people now, there's a trend, and I speak to the guys at SkidUp, the ticket partner, and they said there's a trend now that we sell 40% of all ticket sales in the last few days. And it's like, when you're trying to prepare for a large-scale event, that's too risky for me, you know what I mean? And we're at a point now where I'm happy with the sales, but and I know it's going to fly in the last couple of days, but that's no good because you can't gear up for that, staff levels and stuff like that. So it's a real, real tricky one. And then, like I say, music.
Completely blow your budget. If that didn't, there's always a...
100%.
But it will happen. Like I say, we'll always sell out, and you know from speaking to people that there will. But yeah, you can't have the last week that...
It's hard. I speak to a lot of promoters in Birmingham as well, and they're all this, exactly... They ring me up, like, I'm them, you know, I know, I've got the answers. Like, what do you think to this? I've only done this, man. I'm like, calm down, it's fine. But then when it's me on that side, I'm like, what are we going to do? We're never going to fill it, and but I know for a fact that you get to that day and it's going to be a great day. You know, if we open the club today with the ticket sales we've got, it's going to look amazing, but I'm not happy with that. I need to fill every single room to the maximum, you know. But like I say, music has, like you said there, like the retirement thing happened, and then it was such an amazing show that everyone, I had to do another one. And then we've done another one. We had a couple of years out because of COVID, and then so I think this is our sixth event now. But I want to go on top of that. I don't want to continue trying to do something that's become diluted and very saturated. Last 2 weekends ago, there was 4 events in Birmingham, all the same kind of thing as our house rave, all classics orientated, all the old DJs. So it's become very saturated. So for me, it's like, let's just leave it there and we'll look for the next big thing. But music, about a year ago, I started producing again. And I've got a newfound love for it again. And I think one of the reasons I stopped playing music is because the music went in a certain direction, like very tech house, and it wasn't me, weren't really interested. But then the weirdest thing is, as soon as I announced I'm retiring, Creamfields, we want to book you. Forbidden Forest, we want to book you. So obviously, I'm coming out of retirement for that. It was for like
a lot of your strength.
Exactly. And it was Cream Classics, the Creamfields one was, and Swedish House Mafia were on the same day, and I was like, I can't not be on that flyer, you know? I haven't gone to play that music, I could play classics. But then about a year ago, I started getting like loads of bookings, loads, just weirdly, for very good events that I couldn't really turn down. And I thought to myself, well, why don't I just make my own music? Because I can bring a bit of it, because I'm sick of playing classics now, because I've been doing it for so long with the Our House Rave stuff. Bring a bit of that in to modern day music and just make it your own. So I started doing a bit of that. One of the big tracks that I started back out with was Let's Groove, George Morale re-edit, and that just took off. And then I've worked on a couple of tracks since that, got some big labels that have signed them, and so I thought, right, okay, I'm back in here. I need to really, you know, get this going again. So Radio 1 played a track that I made, Hype the Funk. That was a couple of months ago. Then I had Mark Knight just play a track that's been released this Friday, an EP. Who Players come forward and said, we want you to make 2 tracks. We want to put it out for you. You know, we're going to make a big deal of it, which they have. And now I've got a track lined up with different labels until the end of the year coming out and being released. So the music thing is, it's just come out of nowhere again. And I think having those contacts throughout my life and booking all these big DJs and working with agents, I'm kind of at the table already with them.
Yeah.
And when they're listening to the music now, like, actually, this is actually really good.
And so, they trust you even just to listen to it. I suppose that still the same as back in the day. I can listen to my demo. And then if you get one through, they'll be like, well, we trust.
Find it's like music cyclical. So obviously, because originally it was big piano bass, weren't it? And then Speed Garage landed.
Yeah.
And you were right knee deep in that at that time, weren't you?
Yeah.
So do you find like those things come and go, like the classics are the classics, aren't they?
100%. it works in waves. And I think now there's this resurgence of Speed Garage. I've just made a re-edit. It's weird, actually, because I've gone full circle. So I've just made a re-edit of Matt Dairy's Beautiful, the track. Massive, one of the top three trance tracks from there. And it's weird, because I was talking to Marcella Woods, who sang that track, about jumping on one of the tracks I made. It defected a few months ago. And something came up, maybe because I was speaking to her, I've got it in my head. And I thought, that'd make a really good Speed Garage flip. So what I've done is I've taken part of the vocal, made it trancey but a bit moody kind of sounding. Then it goes into a Speed Garage thing. It's getting battered in Australia. All the Australians who play a lot of that high energy kind of Speed Garage stuff, they're playing it all over. And then Marcella is working with me on it to try to get it as an official remix with Matt Dairy. Brilliant. So that's all kind of happening now. She's typical diva. That she's like knackered with her own voice. And I'm like, this is the voice from your original track. It was got to number two in the charts. Like, it's good. So I wanted to re-sing it. I'm like, let's just release it. So yeah, it's to be talking to people like that is amazing, you know? So if that happens, that'll be next level. Because this is one of the tracks I was playing as a kid. And then all of a sudden you're doing potentially an official remix with her.
Absolutely amazing. Yeah, because I think at the moment, there's a Rihanna tune that's just been remixed into a Speed Garage into All Over Capital Dance every 2 minutes, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's definitely it's definitely soaking back out, isn't it, Speed Garage?
It's called the Reese Bassline, and it's becoming very apparent in a lot of music again now. So, yeah. But a lot of the stuff that I'm making, it is all of like the 90s influence, big pianos and stuff like that. So anyone that jumps on my Spotify, Rougeau, that's it, Rougeau on Spotify, you'll hear it all anyway. So it's, yeah, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the music again.
I'll put the links on to the YouTube.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
Again, slightly, just on music again. So I went to Club Azula years ago.
Yeah.
And I've never been to a minimalist house night before.
Yeah.
So we were in there, and it was in Aldovino in Ibiza.
Okay.
And we were in there, and everyone was telling me how brilliant it was. And I sat there all night, waiting for a beat to drop. It never did.
Oh, God.
And my friends are like, oh, yeah, this is amazing. I was like,
it's like pulling teeth, isn't it?
There's no climax. There's no. Where's the come up?
I like a big, big build up, hands in the air, big piano, bosh. But yeah, you got none of that.
So no minimalist house?
No.
No.
Not for me. Absolutely not for me. Great venue, though. Aldovino, what a place that was.
Is it a restaurant now?
Yeah.
Gone, is it?
A restaurant. I was actually talking to Jim Chef Ryan because we're doing, from his Money Pennies, because we're doing Money Pennies in the main room this weekend at Ayers, right? We did a podcast with him actually a couple of weeks ago, and we're talking about Aldovino, and talking about what an amazing venue that was for them.
The white party there.
The white party, yeah. And you walk outside and you're at the Mediterranean with all the yachts and stuff. And he was saying, well, to you know, put it into sort of words, it was like a Playboys club. And you think
that, wasn't it?
What a place, yeah.
Yeah.
What a place. But yeah, it's a steak restaurant, I believe now.
And that's where you see like the end of eras, isn't it? And Ibiza, was it DC-10s?
Yeah.
Before you went home on the plane, you could there.
Yeah, 100%. And the old Space Terrace as well, you know. But it's still a great place. I've got 5 shows in Ibiza this July. I'm looking forward to getting back there, but it's all moving on a bit now. There's Universe, which was the old, what was the venue before? I can't think what it was called now, with a big globe on the top, you know? Oh, God, what was it called? Can't think. But that's
Glory, mate, on the...
No.
Oh.
The one where they used to... Where Manumission used to be.
Oh. Oh, no, God, you'll listen back to this now, you know? Come on.
Yeah.
Put the answer in the comments, guys.
Yeah, answer in the comments, guys.
Like and share.
Or just cleverly edit it after.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Tell you again, yeah. It's going to come to you at like 3 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah, basically.
That's perfect. So, so the future, so the producing side, this is the be played with. So the producing, you're still doing it, but you don't have to actually be in the venues, and you still.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm doing I'm taking on any event that comes my way that I think I like the look of, you know. And if I know it's going to be a good time, I'll go. If it's like a smaller party in Birmingham, I've done that. Without sounding like I'm too good for it, I don't think that at all. But like I say, it's like I've got family life now. So if I know that the venue's the right thing and fit for me and my music, then I'll go and do it. But the production side of things, I mean, I'm the wrong end of 50 now. You know, it's only so long you can go out and start looking out of place, DJing in clubs, but I still enjoy it. And that's why I kind of pick and choose what I do. But I've got an idea for something as a bit of a payback for Birmingham going forward with a couple of people who are involved with music in the coming year or so, which I'd like to... What I want is a... like one-stop shop for people to learn to DJ, people to be able to come and produce a track, a podcast room, you know, and like an all-in-one sort of studio place, a little bit like some of the places around here do, but more on a, there's a producer, an award-winning producer you can go make a track with. So these young people coming through and go, right, what do I do then? Go and see him, go make a track. You get the right track, get it out. We can help you with that. Also create a bit of a record label kind of thing. And I've always kind of done that with my businesses. I've always done stuff that I know. I've always taken on projects that I know that I've got a passion for. Stephen Barter talks about it a lot. If it doesn't excite him, he doesn't take it. And I thought about it. I thought that actually resonates with me, because why would you, if it's something you're not interested in, I wouldn't open a sock factory. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of truth in that whole thing, and that's exactly why with the music thing, I see it as I've kind of gone full circle and I'm back to where I started again. The studios are running themselves now. And the way I see it is England is not the place now at the moment to be starting new business. No matter what it is, it's difficult. Mm. So, you know, with the music side of things, there's not going to be a lot of money in that, because there's not, sadly, a lot of money apart from the gigs. If you get a number one and you're getting, you know, great sales, that's where the money lies. But a lot of it is just done for passion reasons, really, and a love for the music. So this would be more of a payback thing I'm talking about here. But if I can make it happen, then, yeah, I'd be over the moon.
That sounds fabs.
So.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for your time, mate.
Appreciated it.
It's been a pleasure.
The only guys who will get me to St. Andrews on a... Tuesday afternoon.
We'll take that. We'll put that as a testimony and I'll install it. Yeah. Thanks again.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot.